Hello, welcome back. Episode 2 of Attention Recession with Nicola and Jazz.
Hello, we are here and hopefully smoothing away any technical difficulties, but you know, we're doing our best. I am recording with Delta Airline headphones today because mine decided to die. So as we enter Mercury in retrograde in a couple days, I'm just gearing up for all of the little trials and tribulations, but it's okay.
I'm a little behind on astrology, but I do on Sundays, I do read like a weekly forecast and try to catch
up. Oh, nice. That's good. Good.
But yeah. I don't think I have any, besides this podcast, I don't think I have any big messaging to do in this Mercury retrograde period.
Yeah. I plan to just sleep through it, I hope, is the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully it will just be a wind down for the rest of the year. I'm so tired, just in general. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like they're trying to squeeze me dry in this life, and I'm like, can I just rest?
That's the overall energy. So I had a birthday party last night, and
with the cookie cake.
I couldn't help but feel just the sinister energy in the air amongst everyone. We all kind of got together. And it took maybe 20 minutes before we were like, everything is falling apart. Like, this year is crazy. So many things going wrong. And yeah, we had to like quickly liven up the mood because we were all just like, yeah. I don't know what it is about right now. Or maybe it's just December birthdays in general. Like, once you get to this point in the year, it's oh, really? I don't know. Everyone is very dead. Everyone's very overworked, burnt out, stressed out about the holidays, all the birthdays and work parties and everything. So it adds like that an interesting layer to like the already existing birthday energy that a woman feels in her life, you know.
What would you, if you could pick what time of year your birthday was, what would be like the most, what would be a fun time? Not anything to do with astrology, anything, but like time, just season or month.
God, I would love to be a summer birthday so badly. Like,
yeah.
It's so funny how you grow up. Like, I feel like in school, kids hated having summer birthdays because all of their friends were gone or like at camp or like whatever. But now it's just, I don't know. I feel like I feel so much happier and alive in the summer, but.
Mm-hmm.
I also do like December. I think December is already such a tricky time, so it does add some fun to have my birthday in December. Because then I have that to hold it all together in that awkward between Thanksgiving and Christmas time. You know?
Yeah. I know. It's like I have a late October birthday, which is okay, but I do kind of wish it was a little more – I feel like with holidays and everything, like this time of year is very dense with – celebrations, and it would be nice to kind of like break up the calendar a little bit with a spring summer kind of celebration.
Right. So I don't know. I think it's I'm trying to unpack like in this moment why having a birthday as a woman feels the way that it feels. And it feels like inescapable. And I feel like every year me and I'm sure others go into it being like, there's nothing to be sad about. Everything's great. I'm going to have a birthday and I'm going to have fun. But it always like creeps up on you, this weird like melancholy. And I'm trying to figure out like why that is.
I mean, I know why I get it. It's like a mix of feeling like I'm not in certain places in my life that I want to be by this point, or that I achieved something and maybe didn't keep growing with that I like achieved something and then regressed, or that I'm like, how, like, I'll be really hard on myself where I'm like, how can I be in this position when I'm this old? Like, that's not what this age is supposed to look like, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow. That's super interesting. Like, I feel like still being in my 20s, there's a lot more like generosity given with the like, where am I supposed to be in life? And I do think that's why everyone has like a meltdown when they turn 30, because you feel like you can't be generous with yourself anymore, or you feel like you have to like, have your life like look a certain way.
But there also can be a liberation because you're like, oh, thank God. I don't have to like be like, not that, I mean, you're still young in your 30s, but it's like, oh, I don't have to be like a partier. I don't have to be like in my 20s. I don't have to be like hot and partying or something.
Right.
There's right. like a freedom. It's like, oh, finally. I feel like a lot of people get a liberatory feeling from that 29 to 30 change, but.
God, yeah. I'm looking forward to that particularly because, yeah, I feel like some of the pressure that I start to feel, I think maybe it is reflecting of like the values of being in your 20s is like appearance-based, like what's my vibe? Am I as fun and cool as I was last year or am I regressing past a point of no return and like it's over, the party's over, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially because I don't like party anymore. Like I had just some friends over for dinner and drinks and that was really cute. But yeah, and then there's like the birthday outfit of it all. It's just like, what is my self-expression of the year? And like, I was really going to go and just be so casual. But then I was like, Jasmine, you have to just dress up. And so I put on like a little dress and I was just like, because that just kind of feels what you're supposed to do, you know? And then I don't know. I feel like for me also the melancholy comes from the passage of time, not necessarily the aging of it all. It's like, oh, wow, it's been a year since the last one. And like thinking about everything that's gone down in that year and like how I felt, you know? And like this last year for me has been like a particularly difficult one.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of like mourning also what you thought your year was going to be like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like you're just kind of like, oh, I remember having a birthday last year and putting together my goals and my aspirations. And I don't feel like I've, you know, not that I haven't done certain things because I try not to think about it that way in terms of like achievements or whatever. But I'm just like, you almost expect more to have changed or to have happened.
Yeah.
Or more progress or more whatever. And then you realize and like a year is not that long. I don't know. Maybe
I think too. Yeah. It's also because like the difference between 18 and 19 or 20 and 21, like the difference between being in high school, being in college, being in the working world, et cetera. Like those are bigger growth spurts. And then it is like you do get into your mid, late 20s, your 30s. And it is like, yeah, you're not having these huge growth spurts every year.
Yes.
But that's normal. But it does. Yeah. I think that is why we're kind of hard on ourselves. Cause it's like, oh yeah, a year used to pass and it used to be like, well, so many firsts happened. And it's like, now there's just fewer firsts to have. I mean, that's not even true. There aren't fewer firsts to have, but it's just like,
Yeah,
everything isn't so like radical every year.
You're like, wow. So what did I do this year? I went to work. That's all I can kind of recall. It's funny too. Like everyone also talks about the damage of social media as like a highlight reel and, you know, that being a bad thing. But I feel like in a personal way, I really appreciate being able to look back at my own social media and seeing my best moments and best days, because that to me makes it feel real, you know? Yeah. Like I think it was Noah Cyrus. She was talking about how she takes a picture every time she feels happy so that she can look back and look at all the times that she was happy and know that it existed, you know, so that she doesn't think like when you're depressed, you're like, this is it. I always feel this way. I've never felt anything different, you know? So yeah, I think that's like a nice thing to do. Maybe like every birthday going down like the positive memory lane of like, just compiling the highlights, I guess. I don't know.
It's also like, there's a lot of things that happen every year that are good that you didn't plan for. So it's like, thinking it's like, I didn't think at the outset of that last year that XYZ things were going to happen. I wanted XY or ABC things to happen and maybe ABC didn't, but I got XYZ and I don't know. I'm definitely a lot. I was extremely clenched at my late 20s, early 30s, very hard on myself, very much wanting everything to I was obsessed with like being on a path. I was like, I need to know what direction I'm going because I can't take a step if I don't know what it's leading to. And I was really paralyzed. And so I didn't make any choices, you know, mm-hmm. and just kind of kept, I don't know, I was just surviving. And I was much more like thriving in my early 20s and mid 20s. And then just really, yeah, like took a blow and just kind of, you know, it was rough. It was a hard time. And now I'm much more like, I don't know. I'm just a little more like released to like, all right, well, whatever works out is fine. I'll just follow that thread and that'll be fine. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we also forget that like we're trying to like survive in a system that is like makes it as hard as possible to thrive. Like, I think there's just so much merit in just surviving the year because even like getting a job that makes enough money for you to be able to like mm-hmm. do all of the things you need to do. Like that takes a lot of work just to achieve that bare minimum. And like, I feel like when we're young, we're like making no money, but like we have like 10 roommates and like we don't care and we don't have like, mm-hmm. you know, I would go on trips and like stay in hostels, like my level of needs were so much lower. So I got to focus more on kind of like the enjoyment and the thriving of it all. But I think now it feels like things should be easier, but I do think we're still like having to just try to survive as best as we can and like finding joy outside of that. Is a lot harder yeah. than I think we make it seem, you know? I don't know.
I've also had to, like, remind myself that, like, in the year 2023, like, 30 is a lot different than it was in 1986. You know what I mean? Like, because I'll be like, oh, you know, where was my mom at by the time of the age that I am now or something? And it's just, like, things really have changed. And it's just, it's, you know, it's harder to get a jump start and the rules are really different and the world's really different. But honestly, I also think about, I'm just like, I don't know. There are so many worse ways, like so many worse hands to have been dealt. Like it's fine. You know, like I have a fine. My life is good. Yeah.
You know, and what? Like, yeah.
I'll just keep fine tuning it, but it will always be pretty good.
You know what you said once that like genuinely changed my life? Like it was one of the most one of the most impactful things I think anyone has ever said to me.
Oh my God.
I know. Can you believe? You can have it all, just not in one day.
That, oh yeah. I mean, that's – I didn't make that up, but
– No, but that just like seeped into the core of my being. Like I think of all of the things that I've like wanted and desired and different things I've had at different points in my life, and like maybe one year I want career goals, one year I want relationship goals and friendship goals, and it feels like we won't be satisfied until we have it all in one day, but that's just not yeah. how it works. And like finding the appreciation, you know,
I heard a woman say that, like a woman who's like a CEO of a beauty brand, and she had just like been with her kids and then like flown to this panel, and she was talking about like balance and everything, and she, that was like a quote that she had, but it turns out it's like some famous quote, but it's true. And I was literally said that maybe half an hour ago. I was texting a friend because
wow,
earlier this week, shout out my boyfriend who's gonna listen to this, but I was just very like, oh, I miss living alone. But I'm like, okay, like I think back to all of those years that I was like so lonely and like wanted like yeah. love and companionship and partnership like so badly. And it was such a focus of my life. And, but I had unlimited free time to do whatever I wanted, be living on my own clock, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, just. That's what it is. It's like, I don't know. I've also, the word sacrifice has been on my mind a lot lately. It's just like, you all like, not like mm-hmm. life is about making sacrifice, but there's just always sacrifice. Like
yeah.
you have to give up something at all times. Like there is no having every, I guess that actually leads us pretty nicely into our topic
the women of who the day. Have it all. Dun dun dun.
The and women who are constantly sacrificed in the public eye for having it all.
Yes. So we will be talking today about Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian. Taylor Swift was named Person of the Year by Time Magazine, and Kim Kardashian was named Man of the Year, by GQ. Also, I will say timely because Taylor Swift is a Sagittarius, so she, I think, is having a birthday in like a couple days. So
my birthday dog twin. Has the same birthday as her.
That's iconic. So, your dog needs to get on that billionaire status.
I was thinking of having an Eras tour for him because he's turning 7 and he has had a number of Eras.
I love that so much. You need an Eras party.
I wish. I know. I wish I was more of like a Pinterest style girl who would like really put her back into it and like make that happen because that would be really fun and cute. But I'm just like, I'm just not that girl. Love that girl. I wish I was that girl.
If you could Photoshop his face on like the Eras poster from like the different, you know what I mean? That'd be so cute.
The thing too is that like,
I need that to
obviously
happen.
Dogs don't change their look. So like the only Eras that he has are like, he had a black collar and then he had a cream collar, you know, like he doesn't look any different. And then he had like a black name tag, and then he had a sparkly name tag.
But he's been bicoastal, you know. He's been had bicoastal. His, like, different eras, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've lived in 100 different addresses together. We've lived some life. But yeah, the man of the year and the person of the year, as named by these publications, which I feel like, it's important to just note that these are
PR.
The person who benefits from this is the magazines. Yeah. Magazines are a dying business and have been for a long time, and they're really holding on. Taylor Swift doesn't need this Time Magazine endorsement. Time Magazine needs this cover because they need people to buy this cover so that they can have a little increase of sales at the end of the year, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think that it's important to like just like understand that we're like, it's like award shows. It's fake. It's made up. It's a splashy moment. Same thing with GQ. Kim Kardashian doesn't need this. The culture doesn't need this. GQ needs this. So that's who this is for. And I feel like we need to like have that basic understanding as we talk about this, because a lot of the outrage I see, I mean, I don't know, I guess hopefully part of this podcast will just be about like media literacy, because that is like, the media literacy is so bad. I just, you don't have to take things seriously. Like, things aren't that real. You know what I mean? And like, I just feel like we need to start at a base of like, none of this is very real.
Well, I was also going to say, I was also going to say that it's also coming to a lot of people's attention now that a lot of celebrities buy magazine covers and features, and that is something that like a lot of people in the industry knew, but not a lot of other people did. So while I don't think that Taylor bought the Person of the Year, because we'll get into it, it's pretty obvious she was quite literally the Person of the Year. But, like, did Kim team up and do this to, like, promote her male Skims? And that was, like, you know, it's like, who knows?
I don't know anything about that. Normally, it really is, like, the publication is trading on
grasping,
needing the clout more than the person on the cover needs
interesting
the magazine or the interview. But they're always pegged to promotion of something. Like, there's never a person on a cover for no reason. It's not like, it's always an album release or a movie's coming out. Like, it's never just like, isn't this person so interesting? You know?
Yeah, totally.
It's always, part of a plan. So I also, oh my God, I was like, wait, so who's the woman of the year? And I Googled. And I found a bunch of like lists of like women of the year, but no single woman of the year. And I was like, isn't this so interesting that we kind of have this elevation of women as man of the year and of person of the year? But yet I'm like, isn't this also kind of female erasure in a way that there's no woman of the year?
I also wonder if saying Taylor's person of the year instead of woman of the year is because her success is like transcended gender and like they don't want
it. No. Person of the year, they do every year.
Yeah. It's an annual. No, of course. Yeah. But maybe the lack of women of the year, this sounds bad, but maybe people don't think. People find it more impressive to be the person of the year versus the woman of the year. Maybe that
the woman of the year.
That feels too Glamour magazine, Teen Vogue to be like, we love her. Like, I do think there's but so like, much Glamour, misogyny. I don't know. Like,
Glamour does have a list of women of the year, but it's interesting. Like, why didn't they even have just a singular woman of the year? You know?
Because they couldn't have Taylor. Just kidding.
Why can't we just have. I don't know.
Something to think about.
That's my question for the culture. But yeah, the Taylor one is like the meatier one, so we're going to save that for a second. But first, we'll just talk about the Kim Kardashian. Technically, they did do three Men of the Year covers. So it was Kim, Travis Scott, and Jacob Elordi, who I'm literally always forgetting who that is. I know that he's a hot guy.
But Jacob Elordi?
No. Yeah.
So she was in Euphoria. He played Nate.
Yeah.
Jacob.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Very tall, hot Australian. He's starting to be in so many. He's transcending like TV acting and starting to be in movies. He played Elvis in Priscilla movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he's starting to like pop off.
So stupid in this way. I'm like, I know I hear his name all the time and I know his reputation is that he's a hot guy who's everywhere, but I'm always like, who? Like
We love a man only being known for his looks.
Yeah.
How does
it
feel?
Then Travis Scott, I was like, Travis Scott. Question. That's another one where I'm like, what? Like, I don't know. I feel like Travis Scott and GQ have a very like handshake relationship. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I'm like, Travis Scott of the Travis Scott Festival. That really was.
Oh my God. You don't even know how Astroworld is my 9/11. Like, Astroworld, I could. More deaths than Jan 6. We don't talk about it.
Wow.
Okay. And I'm oh my God. We don't I can't even start on Astroworld.
Bad. That was so bad. And then the BetterHelp. Forgotten.
The like BetterHelp thing afterwards. Do you remember that?
No.
He like afterwards, like a day or two later, was like, I'm partnering with BetterHelp to offer a one month free trial of BetterHelp for everyone who was there. And everyone was like, no, like that is not the right thing to. You don't offer a 1 month BetterHelp trial
when everyone just like actually died. When like
there's actually like I think 9 people died, and you're gonna give BetterHelp 1 month free trial. It was a very like Jenner is in the mix. Yeah,
that's
for the like texting therapy. No.
Oh my God. Anyway, that's. Yeah, him being up
but
there
Travis Scott, part of the extended Kardashian universe.
No, truly.
But yeah, this profile is so bad, and I love the medium of celebrity profile. It can be such a fun read, and this and the time one were so dry. I had to go back so many times to read it because it's so boring and just full of like quotes. And really canned and no nuance and just the worst of
the Kim Kardashian one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Just the worst of what the Kardashian world is critiqued for, which is just being like over controlled. And this really was that. And it also was trying to weave together the life of Robert Kardashian and Kim in this way that was really odd. And I guess because it's Man of the Year, where they were trying to add a man to the story, which then it's like, aren't you kind of undercutting Kim's power?
Yeah.
Because weren't you saying that she's as powerful as a man? So then why do you need her father? I don't know. It was not good.
And I was also kind of, it doesn't surprise me in the slightest, but in the profile, they also interviewed like her entire family and sisters and everything. And I'm like,
yeah,
it's just like they will never be separated from each other. Like it always has to be a family affair. She can't just exist on her own. I know like even Taylor had different quotes from friends and stuff, but there's something about the like the Courtney and Chloe of it all that is just like, I don't know, I almost like yearn for them to have more separation from just being interviewed for her cover. But I don't know, maybe that's fine for them, who knows. But
my unexpected favorite bit was the appearance of psychics, mediums, and healers. Yes. So the story opens with an anecdote about Robert Kardashian seeing a psychic who tells him that the name Kardashian will be internationally known.
Chills. I have chills from that.
And then later in the article, Kim remembers a particular conversation from his last days. "I know you're going to be okay," Robert told her. "It's almost like I can see ahead. I know you're going to be okay. Just take care of your siblings for me."
It's such a funny... Like,
I feel like there is some, like, Armenian – I do feel like there is, like, Armenians are, like, in touch with, like, something deep. I don't know. Like, they're on the wavelength.
Mm. Well, it's just – I thought the whole thing was interesting. So they addressed in the beginning, you know, Robert didn't really believe in psychics but was seeing one anyway, maybe because of his health or other things going on. But, yeah, so Kim admittedly – hasn't done much therapy. She said she did a little bit. She consults with a child psychologist to know how to best raise her children. But her herself is not attending therapy. But she regularly is consulting these psychics and spiritual advisors, which I find to be so interesting as someone, also you too, who also participates in this. And I... really do see that as being such a catalyst for her success, is like being in touch with that like greater world. And it's so funny because I've always, at least in the last like 5 years, been so fascinated by the world of like psychics and mediums and the spiritual world in that way. And it's not looked down upon, but people think it's really just like woo woo girl hobby, whatever. When in reality, the most powerful and influential people are utilizing like psychics and astrologers. And that is the key to their success, but they do not talk about it. So the fact that this was brought up, I think, is really interesting, you know?
Sorry, I think you froze for a second, but now you're back.
Oh, no.
But it might have just been my side. Okay, 2713. I'm writing that down. There's like, I feel I should like research this, but I guess Nancy Reagan was regularly consulting, an astrologer, maybe a psychic, maybe a medium. And at some point in time when Ronald Reagan was, his health was degrading, was like kind of making a lot of shots, like calling a lot of shots based on what her like spiritual psychic, whatever advisors were telling her. So we should research that more because that's fairly sick.
Yeah. And also JP Morgan famously used an astrologer, and he has this famous quote that says, oh, this is perfect for this episode too with Kim and Taylor. He said, "Millionaires don't use astrologers, but billionaires do."
Oh.
So we have our two billionaires of the year coming up.
Leonardo da Vinci was an astrologer to like the aristocrats, and that was how he made – that was like his day job. That he used to finance his like silly science stuff.
Wait, that's incredible. I'm obsessed with that.
Yeah. So Kim uses them. And then also Robert Kardashian, when he got sick, he flew in a Chinese healer, which also like calls back to our Erewhon episode, who told him like not to eat anything processed and like not to have white sugar. So, and had him drink like an herbal concoction.
Yeah. But then Kim proceeded to use like a ton of sugar anyway. because he couldn't like keep food down. I understand, obviously, like when it gets to that point, but it just is interesting. Yeah. Like the one thing you probably are not really supposed to do is that. But
yeah. Anyway, that was kind of the most interesting part of it. I was like, oh,
I agree. Like it feels very, I mean, for the woman who said, get your ass up and work, for her to admit to spiritual guidance is a very interesting angle. And I wonder if this was just, you know, what the journalist decided was really interesting about this and to kind of highlight. But, you know, maybe it's not all just get up and work. Maybe a little bit of it is being in tune with yourself and your spirituality and like this deeper part that is guiding you. You know what I mean? And kind of reducing it all down to work ethic. Because my personal belief is that like work smarter, not harder. Like
100%.
I don't think you will find your success and purpose just by grinding every day, unless you feel that is like your personality and your purpose. But that's kind of the narrative that I feel Taylor and Kim both have in common, is that like never ending grind.
Yeah.
But
which is actually, it's interesting. On Kardashians, Kourtney has been trying to ask him, like, why do you feel this drive? Like, why, like, what is it that you want? Like, why do you work so hard? Like, what do you, and it's kind of interesting that Kourtney isn't quite asking her the question in a way that Kim is able to answer, but it is kind of like, yeah, what are you working for? And Kim's, her answer is kind of just like, I just want to constantly have like new experiences and like new projects and like do new things. But I think she also is a little bit like one of those people who, if she were to stop, she wouldn't be,
no,
she would be so uncomfortable with facing void, you know.
Yes,
like she has absolutely to stay busy, because if she's not busy, then it would be too uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's,
which
I don't
is
know,
cowardly,
it's,
and weak.
It's quite interesting looking at these two women who are both billionaires as of recently. I don't know, like looking at kind of the ethics of it all or the purpose of it all. Like, we'll get into Taylor, but like Taylor similarly can't stop and is always doing these like massive cash grabs. I don't know if that's a good way to say it, but like, like, for an example, with Taylor Swift, she sued Olivia Rodrigo for 50% royalty in, like, her top song because it seemed inspired by Taylor's song. Because maybe some slight melody, and Taylor won. So you have this budding 19-year-old artist with her first hit, and now 50% of her revenue goes to Taylor Swift. And it's just like, why? Do you need more money? Like, what? Why, yeah. What are you in this for? Just to see how big you can get? Maybe that is the motivation for these women, is just to, like, go as far as you can go and see how that goes. But, like, at what cost? You know? I don't know.
Yeah. I have more to say on that, but I just want to – I want to read two really funny quotes from the Kim piece. So part of this – Kim piece is that Skims is launching men's and partnering with the NBA. And there's a quote from, I think it's from Kim. And it says, men have similar insecurities about their bodies as women, she says, whether they talk about them or not. And I don't know why I thought that was like so funny, or I don't know, I felt like that was very like something for us to discuss, like male body insecurity.
I mean, that's why you see so many NBA players with BBLs, you know, they're so insecure about their body, you know.
They get BBLs?
And no, they don't. They do not. And I think that perhaps speaks to that. These men have equal wealth. I mean, I know men do get plastic surgery sometimes, but
yeah,
we're not seeing that to the level of women. And obviously men are entitled to their insecurities, but
for sure. I know. And there definitely is more like the jawline stuff and hair replacement stuff. And there's definitely more focus on male looks and altering that than there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure,
it's also funny.
What are they going to do with Skims? Are they going to be like compressive?
That's what I was going to ask. I think it is just like them having nice underwear is going to give them confidence in their body, which who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows how that's going to go? I don't know. There's something very funny to me about companies pretending like they have a big mission when in reality they just found a gap in the market and they want to make money off of it. I get that from a business perspective, absolutely. But you don't need to pretend this is more than it is. Like, you're mission driven. Like, you just saw there is no new Calvin Klein underwear. I should do that, and I'll partner with the NBA because that's genius, and I'll make a lot of money.
Yeah,
to be like, men have insecurities too. It's like, that's not why you're doing this, you know?
Yeah. You're not doing it.
It feels ingenuine. Male.
Yeah. Okay. And then the other one that I thought was so funny, the Skims co-founder says, Kims is the Michael Jordan of the influencer generation. Many 19-year-olds who never watch Jordan play and don't play basketball themselves wear Air Jordan sneakers every day. Maybe you don't watch the Kardashians every single week, but you're a Skims customer. And I was like, wow, the level of like, that is true. Many 19-year-olds who don't have interest in basketball do wear Air Jordan sneakers. But like, I don't know. I just was like, man, I feel like growing up, there was this thing called being a poser that doesn't exist anymore.
Whoa.
Like, there was this fear of being a poser of like, if you were to appear in a certain way, but you couldn't back it up with the cultural knowledge, that was like something you would get laughed at about. And that just doesn't exist anymore.
Because I feel like everyone has so much knowledge in such small bites of it that they can, or maybe there isn't. I feel like if there's any poser behavior, it's like people have turned it into like political, like, oh, you're a poser for caring about human rights. I think people like care more in that way. Maybe, I don't know. They care less about like image posing. Like, oh, and we'll get to that with Taylor Swift, her saying her album is a gothic punk.
I know. I have distinct memory in seventh grade of wearing, which I think I was in seventh grade in 2001. And I remember wearing like a stud belt and stud bracelet and maybe a tie. And wow. The fashion eighth graders icon. Making fun of me and saying that I looked like I shopped at Hot Topic. So like, and like I was a poser. Like I wasn't like a real punk, you know? And it's like, well,
wow.
I'm a seventh grader in the suburbs. So like, I'm definitely not a real punk. But I took that to heart, you know? And then I remember like going on LimeWire and downloading like Rancid and like all the punk bands. And I was like, I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to listen to all of this music and I'm going to know what this subculture is. And I'm not going to shop at Hot Topic. I'm going to like go to the independent record store and I'm going to like live the values or whatever, because I don't want the eighth graders calling me a poser.
You know, it's funny. I see a lot of this with Gen Z in kind of a different way than is talked about widely. There's this culture with Gen Z women where they want to be really vintage. They want like vintage everything, clothing. They want their home to look very mid-century modern. And you're almost given a poser label if you consume anything like commercial or like you feed into those types of things. It's just, that's like such an interesting thing I've seen with some of my friends that are like a little bit younger. It's like, God forbid you consume something mainstream. It is a weird energy there. They're like, oh, Taylor's album. No, I haven't heard it. In like a way that's like, why would I? Like,
interesting.
I listen to
like Fleetwood Mac or something? Are they like
pretty much. Yeah. Like very much that energy, you know? So that's maybe this like interesting subculture of it all. But the Skims thing is interesting to me. Like the 19-year-olds not watching Kim Kardashian's show, but like wearing Skims. I had kind of like a brain blast when you were talking about that, about how I can't help but feel that, okay, we know Kim is obsessed with trying to be as hot as possible all the time.
Yeah.
And in a way, young women also want to feed into that, like the male gaze of it all. Like, I want to make my body and everything look as good as possible. And so it makes sense that you would want to shop the woman that like has dedicated her life to that. So seeing everyone being a Skims consumer almost feels sad to me. I don't know. Maybe this is just too much, but like I don't know. Skims originally started, and they highlighted this in the article, that it was to broaden shapewear for women and different skin tones, etc. But you kind of hardly see that in their advertisements, that diversity and inclusion. But what I do see is the nipple bra, you know?
Yes.
How can I manufacture this hotness that is so objective that it's just making my boobs look as big as possible, making my waist look as small as possible, making my butt look as lifted as possible. It's like, I don't know.
I know. It's interesting because I feel like Kim was born and is now shining in, like, she was born in the, like, I think she was born in the very early 80s. So she definitely came of age when, like, the Victoria's Secret, like, going to the mall, like, that was, like, you definitely wanted to be, like, thin and have, like, big boobs. And that was, like, yeah, thinness and big breasts, like that 90s and then into early 2000s look. And then she now is in this era that, yeah, also rewards like hyper sexy, even if we call it like body positivity or whatever. It's like even every body is like hyper sexualized of every size. And she kind of, yeah, it's like on the perfect side of both, like, of that, where I feel like if you were maybe born somewhere in the middle, you could have, like, maybe escaped that. Like, maybe you don't, you're not right. as, like, conditioned or trapped by it.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting for me growing up with Kim Kardashian starting to become famous in the beginning of her show, and also being a, like, curvy woman, that yeah. couple years where that was accepted was, like, the most body peace I've ever felt in my life, because it felt like finally, like, having a woman with more curves and a little bit more fat on her was, like, idolized by everyone. That's, like, the body everyone, like, wanted, all the men were talking about, and I felt so accepted because I always have been kind of like on the, not like the curvier side in terms of just like the way my body is like built, I guess. But, and that was so liberating. And then come to now where every part of her body has been liposuctioned except the boobs and the butt. And it's, yeah, it's kind of been sad to watch, and I can imagine that a lot of other women like feel the same, watching that evolution of feeling accepted and then that icon of it all is just stripped away with arm liposuction. You know, it's like, oh, okay, are we not, we don't like arms anymore, okay, cool. Like,
I saw Grimes on Julia Fox's podcast, Iconic Link Up, and that's not the name of the podcast, it's an Iconic Link Up. And Grimes was saying how she like had an eating disorder most of her adult life, and finally kind of after giving birth and stuff, like sort of has come to peace with it. And also part of that was like body positivity movement. And she finally like was like okay with not being like stick thin as she always was. And now that there's like this Ozempic wave, she was like, wait,
yeah,
I finally was like chill,
yeah,
and now this is happening again. Like, can we just wait, can we like go back like a year and like stay there?
Literally, I know, the Ozempic culture of it all, we'll have to dive into at some point. That is such an insane time to be living through, and to just I don't know, there's been so many celebrity transformations through this, and it brings up a lot of mixed emotions with the women that are just existing in their God-given body, you know. And yeah, it's, I know, obviously the intention.
I'm so stupid too. I was like, wow, Mindy Kaling, she finally did it. Like,
it's just like,
I remember reading her first book, like I probably was in college, it was a long time ago, and she said like dieting is my only hobby. Like, if I ever lost the weight, then I wouldn't have anything to do. I thought that was so funny and relatable.
That is hilarious. Like, yeah, like,
what I just happened? Love that she was able to, like, make light of it, because, like, I get it.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah. there's so much to that. Like, so many women that do experience, like, transformational weight loss, like, feel really shitty because they're treated so differently and they're seen how poorly they were treated before versus how they are treated now. And it, like, brings this, very – I don't know. It's interesting.
I've experienced that. I've been on both sides, and it's very interesting. And there is a – it is better to be thin in this world. It just is.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But speaking of someone who's struggled with anorexia, the person of the year. Taylor Swift. Which I think she
deserved.
I think it makes sense. Like, she was she did have a major year. She was, like, the topic. She owned the tabloids, and it was like every other day she had a moment that I don't even know what kind of calendar they keep to make all these moments happen, but the tour, the movie, the dining out, like, with carefully selected friends. I definitely, the whole time, especially with, like, when she would go out to dinner with, like, Joe Jonas's recently separated, I was like, what is the – I just didn't understand. I was like, what are your ambitions here? Like, why
do
you – because you don't need to sell – you're not trying to pump ticket sales. Those are good. You know, what are you
– but I think that is the, like, Taylor Swift, Kim Kardashian of it all. Like, trying to get as much press as possible all the time. And trying to keep things always floating, because if you're not in the news every week, people are going to talk less about your tour, and then the second leg of it may not be as successful. And – it really is just her trying to, I think, stay in the moment, which I understand, because her goal is, I think, to be as big as possible. That is what it feels like, you know, and to, like, profit as much as possible. And it's funny, these two women kind of bring up the feeling of, like, girl boss, or are you just like every other billionaire and we're just kind of supposed to root for you more because of it? I don't know. Like, obviously, like, with Taylor, I grew up listening to her music, loved her so much, so I always do have this attachment to her. But I think the more I notice how deeply parasocial and, like, stan culture everything becomes surrounding her, I start to feel kind of, like, a little bit annoyed, because I'm just kind of, like, I don't know. I don't want to be like, you guys are getting played, because you're not. You're, like, enjoying it. But, like, it's all really strategic. And I think people don't see that as much. And they don't see that a lot of this is for profit. Like, the little games and inside jokes that she plays, it's like, in the article, they stated that they started leaving. What did Taylor say? She said that... I want to read this, like, verbatim, because it was so interesting. When she was experiencing a lull in her fan base, or less attention, or maybe soft canceled or whatever, Swift wrote songs solo, incorporated diverse sonic influences, and placed more clues about personal relationships in her lyrics and album materials for fans to decode. So,
oh yeah, and in that bit she was talking, like, about aging out and being replaced, and how, you know, she had to continually reinvent herself to not be replaced by, which is interesting, because it's not like she was playing the pop diva, like, game, and so it's not like she wasn't playing Mandy Moore's game, you know what I mean? Or, like, Christina Aguilera or Britney Spears. Like, she's playing, like, the singer-songwriter. So why did she feel she was getting replaced and that she couldn't have a long career?
I don't know. Maybe it was like the way women have been treated in the past, feeling replaceable. But yeah, I found that to be very interesting, kind of taking in everything recently, for her to have admitted that she knew that playing on her personal life would bring more success and attention to her music. It's hard to look at a lot of these things genuinely when you know that she has a massive fear of being forgotten and replaced. Yeah. And she knows that this is what works. Like, she's a genius in that way of, like, knowing her fan base, what they want, and how to play on it. And so, yeah, that's what's tough. I think with, like, both of these women, it's like, I do want to appreciate them, but almost they've gotten too big in a way, and that brings a lot of problems. You know, they're trying to be as big as possible, but I think that will cost them if it hasn't already, you know?
So at the beginning of the article, the writer says that Taylor's narrative in life is, quote, one about redemption, where our protagonist discovers new happiness, not despite challenges, but because of them. And then toward the end of the article, he writes, quote, I do not say to her in our conversation that it did not always look that way from the outside. But then I think, who am I to challenge it? If that's how she felt. The point is, she felt canceled. She felt as if her career had been taken from her. Something in her had been lost and she was grieving it. Maybe this is the real Taylor Swift effect, that she gives people, many of them women, particularly girls, who have been conditioned to accept dismissal, gaslighting, and mistreatment from a society that treats their emotions as inconsequential, permission to believe that their interior lives matter. And I was just like, that is the most like I am still trying to figure out the words for it, but it's just like, yes, sweetie, like, you did fall on the ground and you did, like, it's just like it speaks to something about the way of, like, I wish I could fully form what it is, but I was like, that's what's the turnoff about her too, because I've been trying to unpack why I've always felt turned off by Taylor Swift. And literally, is it just like, I'm brunette and so I'm team brunette? Like, is it that shallow? Like, am I just like, oh, she's blonde, I don't like her? But I was thinking, I was like, there's a try-hardness that is off-putting. But then I was like, but Kim is a try-hard too. And I don't find it off-putting in Kim. And like, I was really trying to think, like, what is it about Taylor? Like, is it truly just a physically aesthetic? Do I just not like the way she looks? Like, is it internalized misogyny? Is it, like, trying to figure out what it is? And it's like, I think this is part of it, where it's this delusional, like, obsession with being a victim, where it's like, girl, you have it all. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you're doing amazing, sweetie. And I think Kim really doesn't Kim at times has had the opportunity to really be the victim and play that up, and I think she's kind of kept it to a minimum. And yes, I think that partially just like the way that she was raised, and it sounds like kind of like her family's values are just like, you would never, like, and I think also just being from a little bit of an older generation where she's, she was born at the beginning of the 80s and Taylor's born at the end of the 80s. And I think there's something why would you ever call attention to what's going wrong in your life? Mm. Like, that is a very different attitude. And there's another bit where Taylor says, I've been raised up and down the flagpole of public opinion so many times in the last 20 years. I've been given a tiara and then had it taken away. And I kind of was like, isn't that what being in the public eye for 20 years is? Like, is there anyone who's been in the public eye that long and not gone in and out of favor? Like, what are you talking about, dude? Ugh. I don't understand her.
It's
You've
so
been given the tiara and taken away. Like, if you want a peaceful life, don't be in the public eye.
It's just, yeah. I mean, I had such a hard time not reading both of these profiles extremely negatively Also, there was a lot of like very like quote unquote cringy millennial quotes that Taylor gave that came out.
Oh, I know. We saw that those are also so calculated.
And we saw those first before reading the article. But anyway, going into this, I felt like a very negative view. And I was like, am I just being a hater? Like, again, Taylor Swift was within my top five of Spotify. Like, I do consume her. I like her music. But yeah, you pinpointed something that is exactly what I felt. Like, what I can appreciate about Kim is that she knows that no one is going to give her sympathy if she is a victim. But I think Taylor is still deeply trying to feel acknowledged in that way. But what's tough is that when you strive to be a billionaire, you are quite literally making yourself as least relatable as possible. Because being a billionaire means that you are deciding, I do not want to be like 99% of the population. I want to be above them. And then to want to grasp the sympathy of the people that you are trying to be above never plays out well for people. So I think that's why when we hear her like sad stories about her career getting taken away. And but again, the article said she was saying she was canceled when her 1989 album that same had a million sales in 1 week.
Yeah,
and that's like what the journalist was saying. Like, she doesn't seem canceled, and I can understand. Like, yes, famous people have feelings too. Like, it is incredibly hard to be in the public eye, and like that is something no one will ever be able to understand. And so I can sympathize in that way, but it's tough. I don't know. I think Taylor's whole career, she's been wanting to capitalize on the girl boss energy of it all, of being like, since I am a successful, rich, white woman, the only thing I have to relate to people on is that I'm a woman and not a man. I'll always be treated less because I'm a woman. And it's like, that's very true. And that is fighting the good fight for sure. But it's not giving much.
That was when I was trying to think,
enough
like,
to be relatable, about, you know?
Yeah, because I was kind of trying to think, like, about her and her impact in the world. And I was like, besides, I was like, what does she give people, like, with her music or her persona or whatever? And I was like, she writes relatable love songs, breakup songs, etc. And I was like, but has she, like, does she stand for anything greater than just, like, or has anything, I'm like, not that I wish ill upon her or anything, but I'm like, what kind of like hardship has she been through besides, obviously, I mean, I think everything with Kanye, it sounds fucking horrible. Like, that's bad. But it's like you wouldn't even stand up for any kind of political position in 2016. Like, I don't know if you have a charity. Like, what is your cause? Like,
also, can we just like point out the fact that Taylor spoke more about Kanye making her life difficult than Kim Kardashian did.
Yeah.
The one who
was married
to this man. And like, because she, you know, Taylor spoke in this interview about the Taylor situation and her animosity with Kim for being a part of it, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just so interesting to say that, and not to diminish it, but, you know, Kim was in like a very obviously abusive relationship with Kanye West, and Taylor had her moment of the VMAs stolen from her to be able to give an acceptance speech. Yet she's the one highlighting Kanye West. I don't know. Obviously it's very complicated, but
yeah,
it's just hard. I think at the end of the day, and I've seen this backlash. Do you know who Emma Chamberlain is?
Yeah.
Okay. So she rose to fame with her relatability and her personality. And now there's so much contention because anytime she talks about her struggles, people completely shit on it. They're like, you are rich. You are successful. You have this gorgeous house in Architectural Digest. Like, we don't feel sorry for you anymore. And so there's just this thing as a person of that status you have to cope with. Like, you are given everything and the You're given everything and the one thing you are sacrificing is relatability. And like, you kind of have to be okay with that. That's kind of part of this, you know?
I know. And there's nothing more cringe than like a Chrissy Teigen type person who's like trying to be relatable. And it's like, girl, no, no one relates to you. You're different than us. Like, it's weird. Like, I'm so sick of relatable celebrities. I've been saying this for years. I'm like, can we just bring back? And I think that's something that's kind of like nice about Kim. It's like, she's not living a relatable life and she knows it. Like,
yes, that awareness like, helps a lot.
It's like, yeah, you live a totally weird, magnificent, crazy life. And you don't try to act like, I'm just like you guys. Hey, Ollie, quiet. Make a note of the time.
I marked it. It's okay.
Okay, there was a bit in the article where he writes, she harnessed, like, about Taylor having such a magnificent year. Quote, she has harnessed the power of media, both traditional and new, to create something wholly unique.
Holly, stop.
I don't know. Oh, they might be doing the recycling in the hallway. That's probably why.
Okay, start at the beginning. I marked it.
Quote, she has harnessed the power.
Intro the quote again.
Oh, yeah. So there's a bit in the article where the writer says, quote, she has harnessed the power of the media, both traditional and new, to create something wholly unique. A narrative world in which her music is just one piece in an interactive, shape-shifting story. Swift is that story's architect and hero, protagonist and narrator. And I was like, isn't that exactly what the Kardashians did with the show, social media, brands? Like, they've created like an interactive universe that you can live within, like literally from your underwear out.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And the show, yeah. Yeah.
Ollie, stop it.
Yeah, but something also relating to both of them is highlighting how hard they work, how no days off they are, and attributing that to so much of their success, which it definitely is. You know, they both really put in the time and work. And this quote I'm looking at here that you had down, I know that I'm going on stage, whether I'm sick, injured, heartbroken, uncomfortable, or stressed, she says. That's part of my identity as a human now. Yeah, you said this is very Kim also, and it's just interesting too because, I don't know, me being negative again, like, that's what 99% of the working class has to do. We have to go to work,
yeah,
sick, tired, heartbroken, like, because we have no choice, you know, like.
What do you think your bus driver is doing? Like,
yeah, like, it's just, I can appreciate her success, but yeah, I do think I feel tainted reading this. I feel, I don't know. Like, I loved Taylor the most when her attitude was really like, if you don't want me to write bad songs about you, don't do bad things. Like, her being kind of like, F you about everything felt more authentic. And this is, I think, what you were saying, like, authenticity is out. And I heard someone else say that, or no, sorry, relatability is out, authenticity is in. And I think it's easy to tell when someone is trying to be relatable when they should just be authentic. If she kind of goes back to being like, fuck you guys, I was the number one person of the year beating out all these men, like, enjoy.
She,
you know,
the way she operates, just, it reminds me of like a politician. And like, there's nothing, yeah, there's nothing relatable or authentic about any politician, but it just seems very like everything's a photo op. Everything is like very specific and strategic, and how's it going to look and how's it going to play and what are the ratings and is the demo, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's how she feels to me, like a politician.
Yeah.
And that is not a person to me. That's like, it's like a brand. Like,
and that's why she's also never really taken a stance on anything except coming out as not a Trump supporter in like 2016 or whatever, because her objective is like optimal success. And so alienating any percentage of her fans is not worth it to her, because why take a stand when you cannot and just make everyone your fan, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is also the greater cultural aspect of both of these profiles. And I really like to look at why these matter now and what our feelings about them say. And I think what I am synthesizing from my experience reading them is that we either want someone to be kind of so authentically themselves, or we want someone that is standing for something. You know, our world is becoming a hellscape in so many ways, within world politics, capitalism in the United States, et cetera, et cetera. And our generation is like craving someone that cares about something. And I think it's going to go out of style for these celebrities to not care about anything, or to try to attach themselves to movements that they have no part kind of relating to. And I think that's why I felt kind of like annoyed reading both of these profiles, because I'm just like, I feel like we're moving out of this a little bit. I don't know. Things are changing.
Both profiles were very bad. They were boring to read. They didn't really reveal anything new about their subjects. And both of these people are, I don't know. It's also like, I don't know what there's new to say about either of these people, or what there is, like, what more can we feed? Like, that's the thing too about, you have to like, you have to go away and come back, I feel like.
Yes.
You can't be always on.
Well, that's a huge thing they teach actors to do, because, you know, we see someone like Jennifer Lawrence, for example. She was so popular and so big, and everyone started to turn on her because it was oversaturated. So they are instructed to go away for like a year or two and then come back and people feel good again. Rachel McAdams also did this at the peak of her career, because she didn't want to risk getting cut down because she was overexposed. Mm-hmm. So that's what's interesting about Taylor feeling her tiaras being given and taken away. It's like there are things to measure how much, you know, how much taking away of the tiara happens if it's on your own terms. But if you're trying like to be everywhere all the time, you know?
Yeah. The higher you climb, the higher you can fall. So it's like that, it's called risk. Like, how much risk are you willing to, like, you, it's like there's something crybaby about it. And there's something about Kim that isn't crybaby. Like, I feel like Kim knows the amount of risk she's taking on. Like, she has an understanding. Like, even though Taylor is, I think, like, she's a 34-year-old woman, there's something, she's a girl. And Kim does seem like a woman, like a grown-up.
Right.
And, yeah. I think the last, like, big quote from the article that I want to discuss. Whew. All right. If we have to speak stereotypically about the feminine and the masculine, she says, women have been fed the message that what we naturally gravitate toward, she has a few examples, girlhood, feelings, love, breakups, analyzing those feelings, talking about them nonstop, glitter, sequins. We've been taught that those things are more frivolous than the things that stereotypically gendered men gravitate toward, right? And what has existed since the dawn of time? Patriarchal society, which I don't know if that's factually correct. What fuels a patriarchal society? Money, flow of revenue, the economy. So actually, if we're going to look at this in the most cynical way possible, feminine ideas becoming lucrative means that more female art will get made. It's extremely heartening. And I was like, whoa, this, oh my God, like piece by piece, this gives me so much to think about. And I kind of was just like, I don't know if you got, I don't know if you pulled the thread all the way, girl.
Yeah. I mean, this, both of them very much highlight the truth of the matter. Neither of them are trying to disrupt the patriarchy. They're trying to become the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing, like, they're seeing what men are doing to the economy, and they're trying to become that rather than shifting a culture in which there is no, like, hierarchy. Because, like, I saw a video about this recently, but, like, the matriarchy is not the patriarchy in reverse. It is about, like, a collective ecosystem where there is, like, this equality and capitalism and patriarchy go so hand in hand. So for her to be the most capitalistic artist out right now and trying to attack the patriarchy without addressing that they're best friends to the patriarchy and capitalism is what makes this feel inauthentic. Like, you're not trying to get rid of the structure, you're trying to replace it with yourself, and
it's also
becoming,
like,
the men.
So what you're saying, So what you're saying is mining female pain for female pain and female experience for the profit of fill in the blank. Like, what? Like, right. I don't know if that's really. It reminds me of in the 2010s, there was this era of confessional journalism where women were basically incentivized. If you wanted to be a writer and have a byline and start your career, you were basically incentivized to write about the worst thing that's happened to you, your rape, your abortion, your whatever, for maybe $100 or something like that. And it was like you're trading on your pain so that you can jumpstart your career or whatever. And then there was a lot of backlash many years later because it was like all these girls sold their stories and it's online forever. And all they got was $100. And then, you know, I think a number of those people wound up probably having a lot of terrible consequences. And it was like that for the publisher was great because they probably got a ton of views and clicks and ad sales because of that. And this kind of feels like the same thing where I'm like, I don't think that we want to feed the machine with girlhood feelings, love breakups, analyzing those feelings, talking about them nonstop.
Yeah, I also find it interesting her saying that she's trying to put more female art out into the world while simultaneously suing Olivia Rodrigo, a new artist, for having a song that slightly resembled her song. It's like,
yeah,
what is she actually doing to pave the way for women? She could create these massive foundations to push forward women and give them to the space to create or provide funds for women to provide space for their art, anything. But I've never heard of it. And so if I've never heard of it and I'm online 25 hours a day, I don't believe it's happening. So again, I would feel much more satisfied if she was just I'm a capitalist and I want money and I want power. And I love making music and it's fun. And that's the end of that. Like trying to pretend it's something more when you're not actually doing it.
You know who's kind of an interesting, who is kind of an interesting person that toes the line between both of these women is Beyonce. Because Beyonce keeps it fucking quiet, but she makes a lot of money. Yeah. She's also an artist. She puts on a good show. She's a hard worker. We all know the Virgo. Rabid fan base, but she doesn't really share that much about her life. She keeps it a little bit tighter and it's a little bit more respectable. And she's also older. She's older than Kim, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And also she was such a huge woman of the year and it has not been talked about really. And
yeah,
it's just, I mean, obviously it's been talked about, but within these profiles, Yeah. I don't know. It feels like exactly what you said. It's like using these narratives as PR. And whereas someone like Beyonce is like letting her art speak for itself and performance and like being a woman of color and like opening this path for so many other women of color to succeed and like lifting people up. Like I see Beyonce doing that so much more. And it's like, she's not out here talking about paving the way for women. Taylor is. And I don't know if I've ever seen her do that. You know, it's, I don't know.
And she also does her cynical brand deals and has her activewear collection and is working her child into the performance. You know what I mean? Like, she's doing all that stuff too. Like, whatever. But there's not really as much critique about it because she doesn't really pretend that she's doing anything else because she doesn't really have a mission statement. She doesn't really tell us what she's doing. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like Taylor just needs – I mean, whatever. Taylor's doing fine. She has her – it's fine. You know, she's fine. Taylor doesn't need us. She doesn't need – she's doing fine. I also found it interesting. The only fans that they spoke to in the article were a 20 and a 21-year-old. And I was like, oh, that's interesting because when she started making music, you were little. And, like, you're not – you didn't really, like, grow up with her the way that someone who is maybe the same age as her and kind of, like, grew with her. Did. And the girl, one of the girls had a Taylor's Version tattoo on her forearm. And I was like, girl.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Raise the legal tattoo age to 26.
Literally. I think everyone would be thankful for that.
I think so.
So, yeah. What are our final thoughts on this? I feel like I kind of harped a lot on mine that I just feel, I don't know, as someone who tries to actively fight against capitalism, it is hard to support women just doing the same thing that I've criticized men for doing for like ever. You know what I mean? And so there's not enough glitter and sparkle that will kind of take that away. And that's why I think I feel very pessimistic reading these. How about you? What do you think?
I guess I was kind of hoping through talking about it, I would like get some clarity, but I still feel just as clouded as like, I feel like I said at the beginning, these pieces are more for the magazines than they're for the fans or the art or the subjects. And I don't think either of them is like, especially interesting or revealing. And yeah, I guess the main point that I got through in our conversation is like Kim just being like, I'm a businesswoman and like a workaholic and I share my life compulsively and like, yeah, I'm vain. And like, it's just like, yeah, at least you're upfront about it. At least you like know who you are and you know what you're doing. And something about Taylor is like, maybe it's a lack of self-awareness or I don't know. Like there's something that I still don't 100% know why she gives me the ick, because I do think she's a talented songwriter, talented artist, you know, world builder, dedicated to her craft. Like, but there's something as far as like a star or like a celebrity, there's still something missing for me there where I'm just like, I don't think you're awesome.
Well, it's exactly what you mentioned in the very beginning of the episode, that you feel like any dislike or disinterest in Taylor Swift means that you are internalized misogyny or you hate women. You know, it has to be something deeper. There's so many artists that I don't care about.
I was just trying to like think, what is it that like, you know, question myself. Like, I mean, I will tell you, like, my first distaste of her was the first time that I heard that lyric that was like, she's a cheerleader and I'm on the bleachers. And I was like, fuck off. You're the cheerleader. You're blonde and tall and thin and classically good looking. Like, I'm weird. I'm on the bleachers, dude. Like, don't try to take weird girl valor. You're not weird.
Yeah.
And now she literally is the football girlfriend. And it's like, I guess, yeah, it's like maybe she always has been just trying to like claim victim, claim weird, claim offness. And it's just like, that's never been you. You've always had it all, dude. Like, just maybe she has guilt for having it all.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I think that is also to say, like, you don't have to be a Taylor stan, and that doesn't have to mean anything. There's so many artists that I don't care for so much, but I think the way that, because of how big Taylor is now, it feels like you're taking almost a political stance by feeling any type of way about her. You know what I mean? Like, even our conversation would get, like, ripped apart by, like, Swifties on TikTok and whatever. And it's, like, it's really an interesting stan culture of it all.
Yeah.
So.
And I think, like, stan culture is heightened from a place of loneliness. Actually, my friend was telling me last night that a lot of K-pop stan culture in Korea is, like, bored, middle-aged housewives.
Wow.
Like, it's not all young people. Because I guess his friend has, like, an in-depth K-pop podcast. And she was saying, like, yeah, like, there was recently something where the fans were, like, laying on the tarmac so the band couldn't, like, take off or something. And it was a bunch of, like, middle-aged women. And it's just, like, damn, people are so fucking lonely. And the only way that they can find community is, like, through this. So I don't know. That's loneliness and Ozempic are topics for another time. But thank you guys for listening. Thank you for the feedback on the first episode.
Yes, and that was so fun.
Subscribe and share with your friends and give it stars.
Five of them, to be specific. Okay. We'll see you next time. Bye.
All right. Bye.